Hello and welcome to Imp's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. A link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the newsletter over on Social Suplex. Shout out to Trish and Tim as always, and everybody else who has contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's AEW Match Guide. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes of justifying going against my morals, but not really believing in it and getting that uncomfortable, unsettled feeling in my stomach, just for a whole 30 minutes. So sit in and get ready to feel that uncomfortable feeling too, as we talk about Night of Champions, CM Punk, live from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and we'll also cover Monday Night Raw from Pittsburgh as well. Live from the beautiful city of Riyadh. Are you ready for your bi-annual government-paid propaganda show? Immediate note before I jump into stuff. Over here, outside the US, they've been muting the ads and plugs, so instead of verbal propaganda overlaying the establishing city shots, I just got crowd ambience and low-level music. Also, Mickey Flanagan's completely ruined my read of that word. He's a stand-up comedian over in the UK, and is purposely just to get a laugh. He says the word as ambiance. And whenever I read it now, that's how I read it, and now I can't say it properly. I've tried to tone down saying it like that. That's why I say the word weirdly now, because I'm not saying it right, but not saying it like that. I don't go ambiance. Anyway, let me talk about Saudi Arabia. So sorry if I miss something worth talking about. There was still a lot of propaganda. There were still video packages that flat out just played as well. So yes, don't worry. I did get the massive tourism promo package that played during the show. I did get that. You got to go to Saudi Arabia. They've got the Pokemon Go Center. Like, why would you not? What do you mean they killed a journalist? Pokemon Go. If the show did the job for you, as I said before, the shows are watchable now. We are years away, quite literally, from those early shows where it was horrifically bad propaganda. As in, not only was it not a great show, the propaganda on it wasn't done well either. As the point I was making last week is, like, from a show structure and like that analytical perspective, the propaganda's done a lot better now. You can see people falling for it now. In the past, it's kind of like, come on. now I can understand it. Like, I can see a lot of people going, oh, I'll go to Saudi Arabia. Yeah, that's why doing this show, paid for by the government to do the propaganda, has got so much criticism. This is the more dangerous version because it works. Anyway, let's jump on over to the main event, the bit that everybody was talking about when I woke up Sunday morning, because I did not watch this show live. What did I do on Saturday? I think I was at my brother's house. I was just not in the house. It was Saturday. I went out. So the version I watched as well, not only was it not the version where I got to get all the plug reads, because over here in the Europe we get the stuff got out, but also I didn't watch it live. So I skipped a lot and I definitely missed the odd little bit. When I saw a promo package playing or something, I was like, okay, this is going to be about 5 minutes long, and I've got the entrances as well. I can really cut down the time if I just skip to stuff. I'm somebody who gets value out of the entrances a lot of the time. I don't always include the entrances at timings between stuff, because for me the entrances can be so much about the character work that in WWE especially, where they apparently focus more on that, the presentation of that stuff means a lot more than just like jumping from match to match. That's not really how the shows to me are meant to be watched. But like, if I am counting like what's actually happening, sometimes it can just feel like there's a lot of nothing in between stuff. So you got long big entrances right after you've had a long promo package and you've had nothing happening. So let's jump on in to the WWE Undisputed Universal Championship main event, John Cena versus CM Punk in Saudi Arabia.
Rollins clocking Punk with the briefcase, and now a stop to CM Punk.
It was like deja vu.
The referee is back in. Cena, damn it, Cena!
New top Saudi Arabian babyface CM Punk doing the eating shit tour as his character is assassinated both on and off camera. A wild folding in of his real life and in-character hypocrisy when we're meant to be cheering for the man is the most weird part about this entire thing. For me, that's the craziest thing, where they've brought that all up. And I've talked about it like ad nauseum on the past two shows. So if you want to just like hear my actual breakdowns of this, whenever I mention Punk Cena, I've not been able just to talk about it quickly. I've ranted on about stuff. So if you want to know like my actual feelings on it, go listen to those shows, because I go into it in so much depth. But I think the entire thing falls apart when they can't actually criticise Punk accepting the match. When Cena said accepting the match would prove him a hypocrite, he justifies taking the match, and then Cena doesn't call him a hypocrite. Feud dies. At that point, it's dead. What are we basing this off of now? What is proving Punk's hypocrisy? Because Cena then didn't jump and do a whole celebratory thing, and then kind of like softly alluded to it in the pipe bomb type of thing that they did. Then we get to Saudi Arabia. I'm like, I'll get to the match, but... Jesus Christ, the stuff that happened in the build-up to this show. With CM Punk flying to Saudi Arabia, pushing a kid away. So, not a great start. Then they're doing the like fan fest tour to the fans where the wrestlers come out on the stage. And the Saudi Arabia fans who were there, there were a bunch of them who were not happy with Punk. And pretty much demanding an apology, which kind of played into their hands. It's exactly why Punk had come out onto the stage, was to do that exact thing. And he does it, and he apologises, saying that he's basically just in a crappy mood that day and sent the tweet off, and he was never meant it as an insult to the Saudi Arabian people. The only thing that I read true into that is pretty much that final part of the sentiment. When he said something like that, that's not a diss at the Saudi Arabian people. That's more because that's what I'm doing when I'm critiquing this, and I've constantly have to, especially when I was writing for Laws of Pain / Wrestling Headlines, I constantly had to make that clarification. And it was really interesting watching people in the comments basically argue between each other, where somebody would jump in and be like, what's the Saudi Arabian people don't deserve a show? And I wouldn't even have to jump in, because somebody else would be there being like, you clearly didn't read the column. He made it very, very clear, and the kind of like analogies he's using makes it very, very clear. It's like, oh, thank you, that means that the writing actually worked. It's great to see. But just that sentiment of criticising these shows isn't criticising the people of the country. Criticising the propaganda of these shows, it's a sentiment that I said last week. A government does not represent these people, and this show represents the government. And for me, just making sure that it's painfully clear is quite important to the critique of these shows. Then how the shows use and do the propaganda is the next thing. Then you can critique the actual wrestling in the show that was happening. Because my God, that tourism advert. Bloody hell. That's the thing that makes the CM Punk thing so completely fall apart whenever you lift up just any form of critique eye. Because the entire thing is designed for you to cheer for him, including the people of Saudi Arabia. When John Cena's leading line in the on-telly feud, and I'm not talking about how Punk's real life of personality may have changed within the time frame of him sending that tweet and him here today. I'm not even saying that he's reached a point where he can justify going against his morals, where a previous younger version of him would have been like, wow, I would have been so up against this. I'm not critiquing any of that. The thing I'm critiquing is the on-camera stuff. Like, many people will be talking for that stuff, but I like to try and at least focus on how's it falling into the actual TV. And the entire feud is designed for you to cheer Punk and get really angry at Cena right ahead of his match for Cody. And for me, that's why I'm the most disappointed that he didn't then point out Punk's hypocrisy in choosing the match. And then Cena's proven right again when he wins. We don't get any of that. Instead, we get like a lucky survival. We've gone for more of the style of trying to make him look beatable and hanging on to that title. It's just interferences keep granting him that win in terms of people's different views and things. So Cena holds on to that championship, but in terms of like the building of the character and building up that morality of the villain to eventually be broken down by somebody like Cody, like none of it got confirmed or established or just proven in that way. The feud did nothing to enhance or further the character. It just kind of was. And that's been my main thing with WWE since this year's WrestleMania. And it kind of reared its head during the road to it. We're like slowly slinking back into moments happening, and that kind of like era of it really did feel like we're getting character progression happening again. That's just seemingly died, and it feels like we're leaning more into like hints of moments possibly happening. But yeah, really with this entire feud, I feel the same that I do about heel Cena, where it just feels disappointed, and a huge part of that is just not focusing in on the character. And this feud could have been absolutely huge in doing that. I mean, a Punk feud this time last year with Drew McIntyre was doing exactly that. Just the way it was able to bleed into each other's characters and the way they were dancing back and forth was huge for both people. Then we get to the match here with Punk and Cena. How does this event anything for either man in terms of their on-screen character? they can kind of allude to it, but also when we come to Monday Night Raw, like, he's just angry at Seth Rollins. He doesn't get like a post promo or anything. He doesn't come out and do anything where he's like, I feel like I showed growth or blah blah blah, that sort of thing. Because that's what it felt like the TV version of Punk was trying to show in Go to Saudi Arabia. It wasn't trying to show him going against his morals, proving he's a hypocrite, and then going and proving that he's become a bigger man. There's none of that. And for me, you could possibly at least do that if you show Cena trying to show that the plan works. Like, Punk got himself all hyped up and he went to do the match and da-da-da. Then he goes and justifies it, and Cena doesn't call him a hypocrite at all. So, well, what are we even doing here? What's the point? There is no calling him out on the thing. There is no victory for Cena morally in the build-up. Then the victory for Cena there's like not even going to get you like that excited for his match against Cody. It all just feels like things happening without really clear character direction. And the reason I want to build up this Cena thing is that so it means more when he loses. It makes far more sense. And these for me feel like obvious shit, which gets me a little bit more concerned that, well, how are these sorts of details falling through the cracks? Basically, it just feels like the product has jumped up in terms of like the level of smartness in terms of the actual writing, when the production has always been relatively simple in a way in terms of where you get to get across its stories. But at least the actual you feel there was actually effort put into things and thought through for a really long time. But we're kind of right back into moments, WWE, which is a bit disappointing. this whole scene of runs kind of just felt like that. There wasn't really a clear vision for the character. And then on top of that, the not real clear vision for the character means they haven't really got a real clear statement that any of it is making, or kind of like any commentary to add to the Cody character. It's all just a bit naff. This is a shame. But you can't argue that all the effort they put in made the Saudi Arabian fans cheer for CM Punk like he was their hometown boy. That's kind of just what I was like. He's their top baby face right now. But because you're meant to be cheering for CM Punk, to get this, makes this whole thing wild. Cena never gets his look I'm right ultimate baddie moment, which is, that's what was the entire point of the feud? Was it all just for this CM Punk stuff? Almost like a detour to push the man onto the eating shit tour so that he can then do that whole thing, prove his morality doesn't mean anything and he's a hypocrite and all that stuff, when it doesn't really feed into the show. This is all stuff that isn't relevant to the actual story you're trying to tell. This is all the sidebar that doesn't really matter, which is the type of shit we talked about in the Vince era. Like this kind of thing just propping up, not really actually being relevant to anyone's main drive that they're going for. It's just Vince wants to embarrass someone, so it happens. Like, are we back to that shit? That's kind of what this kind of feels like. The match itself reminded me that it's always good to get a reminder that your old favourites are, well, old. And all we had to do to get here was have a man sell out his every previously stated list of morals and take the money. Not even the huge checks of the past. TKO don't let that trickle down anymore. The modern WWE main event style becomes pretty boring in heel Cena's hands. What doesn't help is that all his matches so far have been with the older lads, not defending against a single name from after his late noughties era. No one under 40 could carry the load of keeping the pace up. So what we get is slow and plodding, just waiting for the interferences. We've got the Money in the Bank main event tag match, but it has a title defences? Like what? Randy Orton, R-Truth, CM Punk. It's like, oh god, this is a... And if he drops the belt to Cody, like, the run-up to Cody was just like, oh, yeah, no wonder I'm not feeling, like, super positive. Like, the in-ring product for this lad has... Well, it's not been much. And here goes my other critique. This match was nothing and boring amidst a hot KSA crowd. Before, they popped big for yet another main event playing in the Philly green shadow of WrestleMania 40. I critiqued that on last week's show after the interference-heavy Raw ending, but not 5 days later, and the exact same problem reared its head once again. There's nothing wrong with interference heavy main events. I don't adhere to labelling thing equals bad, as I believe it's more thing done badly. That said, when every main event has a heavy reliance on interference pops, then we've got a problem. Paying half attention whilst waiting for the run-ins has become the house show style, and they're not changing it up. On top of that, the modern WWE main event style has a longer running time expected, meaning this shit has to be extended out to half an hour, when the in-ring more floaty showman style of Cena's era is more designed for half that length. Long story short, crowds start off hot, get bored and do their own thing for a bit, then wait for the run-ins. Arguably, the mid-match bit they reacted the best to was just hitting their signature spots in a slower flow than they did 14 years ago. Hey, it works for Randy Orton. Why not just have the main event be that too? Because it's boring. That's why. But I can't lie. The live crowd ate it up. They were going crazy for this shit, whilst I'm sat there at home being like... I could skip forward, but I got to bloody write about it. So yeah, onto the bit that actually mattered, the interferences. Our final 10 minutes were kicked into via Cena declining to use the title shot and instead going for an AA, which got countered for a GTS pop and near fall. The subsequent exchange sent the referee down, and after there was no pin count, Punk called out a new referee, only to get burn it down. Sethi Boo and the Killer Bees, with Heyman clutching that Money in the Bank briefcase, strode on down as the crowd chanted OTC. He's not coming out for this. Cole even called the guy Big Bad Bruisers, Bron Breakker and Big Bronson Reed. Like, you know what? His script was right. There is even more room for bees. You're right. Why don't I think of putting Big Bad Bruisers in front of it? The beatdown went not very well. A tired Punk overshot his dive, and then the power through the Saudi announce table was not in sync either. Cena gave the crowd their opportunity to pop for the AA in stopping Seth cashing in, before also pouncing the referee who was running down before nailing the move on Rollins. Pendulum Sami Zayn gave us a repeat run-in from Raw and dive off the stage to take away Bron Breakker. Impressive AA to Big Bronson. Repeat shot of the camera looking at Cena's face over Punk's shoulder during a respectful hug. Punk doing it on purpose, and he fully had read Cena, but he didn't see Seth clobbering in with the Money in the Bank briefcase. A stomp followed up, out the ring Rollins was thrown, and Cena won off the chaos. The wrestling portion is laborious, and the run-ins have developed a predictable pattern. End of review. We swiftly move on. King of the Ring, Randy Pandy Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes. The two Nepo stable legacy friends finally got their match together. The Middle East very much feeling the American Nightmare right now. And we're really into Cody too. That's a dark. Some jokes are too obvious to not make, even if they're a bit dark. So sometimes my brain goes places. The crowd tried their best to be part of a France-like atmosphere as they quickly hyped themselves up into ovation after the bell. That said, the actual match was kind of what you'd expect. Cody reclaiming his throne as the most over lad, Randy Orton slower than ever whilst also getting the biggest reactions of his career. Rhodes did the heavy work whilst Orton saw the gradual wearing down of his back. Yep, that's right, plenty of pausing to go. Urgh. They teased the RKO really well, having Cody nailing his cutters after fending off an early attempt, sneaking it in after the man had just survived a crossroads. Rhodes slowing down after he hit his finisher convinced me of a reset, when we were actually in the middle of your standard finisher kickouts. And it worked, the pop for the sudden RKO was so loud. And I fully bought, okay, this is like a reset point to then do the next sequence, when actually we're in the middle of the sequence. Randy Pandy had to hype himself up, with the help from the crowd, to go for the punt kick on his mate. It was Dodge though, and did well to convince me that we were on the precipice of a final act Cody flow. But they got me again, the Cody cutter that would have properly sent us, it was instead taken with a second RKO encounter. Orton turned to his old tricks after the kickout, grabbing a chair to distract the referee so he could remove the top turnbuckle, and in almost immediate Toro Yano fashion, Cody countered, fending him off, then shoved him into the exposed buckle and hit the crossroads for the win. WWE does often give you a Yano match ending, but plays it as serious and competitive. Like, this is hokey Yano shit. But he's meant to be like, oh, Randy Orton's doing that thing, oh, and that's what's cost him. It's what's cost him is being the evil person. Yeah, that the trickster stuff costing Yano is what costs Yano comedically so many times. After the match, Cody got his crown. So much better to have them hold it instead of wear it. The Vince era of every winner getting a shitty royal gimmick is fully gone. Telling the crowd he understands he had to go through crowd favourites to win and that he'll have to do it again at SummerSlam, but he's going to reclaim the ball that's his. Losing your balls is quite the theme on this show, huh? And onto the Queen of the Ring, Asuka versus Jade Cargill. Asuka looking awesome and Cargill in full Storm from X-Men bodysuit. Immediately off the entrances, it felt like we're into something bigger. Really helped me snap out of my mid-card attention lull, which I will get to in a second. The match itself was just okay and the crowd treated it like dirt nothing. Like, oh my word, reaction to this match. They liked Asuka. They were having none of Jade. But in terms of building up Jade to be Queen of the Ring, if you're going to have anyone help get Cargill over in her ascension finally taking place, having Asuka as your dance partner is really sure to help. That said, this was the match overall the crowd were the most polite for. Ended up booing Jade and cheering for Asuka, but not really reacting to the match as the production tried their best to find those sound pockets. The big boot that normally gets a nice pop instead got a mumbling boo, chanted their own thing in no reaction for the final flow before the finish sounded like disappointment. The script and production gave Jade her goody platform moment, but when the production died down to capture Byron Saxon's mic, you could just hear the disgruntlement and mumbling. They move on like it's nothing, but that felt like a very telling reaction. Can this Jade character work as a superhero goodie? Generic lines about believing in yourself certainly aren't going to help prop her up, and maybe that just feeds into perception as well that WWE's writing's just taking a fall this year. If this is the level of stuff you're giving to someone that you're genuinely getting behind, it's like, oh, that's a...
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
That's a concern. We'll let it play out. That's our favourite phrase, right, gang? We'll let it play out. I'm not someone who says gang. I'm not Mel Goodrich. A street fight, Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez. Hyped as the first women's street fight in Saudi Arabia as a nod for further progress, 2 weeks after a pro women's rights journalist was executed. Received a whole promo package that wasn't being told on TV at all, so I guess kudos to the production team for putting that together. Editing around a lot of the animosity actually being aimed at Liv, until the final Raw before this show when they did the whole angle with Raquel and then bring up the whole "we used to be friends" thing in the past, which was like a crutch for Trips back in his NXT days. The two clobbered each other in a Teddy level street fight, but the crowd ate it up and it worked perfectly as a breather between the two tournament finals. So that's what it felt like. It was like, okay, it's not like the most crazy match in the world, but the crowd was so behind Rhea Ripley that it makes a lot of sense to give her this kind of this focus, give us this here. And it also felt like, oh yeah, this could also be like a four match card where each match gets their kind of time to flow. I was going to say almost AEW style, where you give it each match like 20 minutes and it feels relatively like really sink your teeth into each match. Little did I know. Somebody had completely forgotten this card as he was watching it, and this mid card, it falls off for me. It falls off a cliff either at this one or it's the, even the Sami Zayn. I'm like, maybe you don't need that. Anyway, we'll get to it. Roxanne Perez ran interference, and it turns out three women in shiny black vinyl was my limit of surely there's another color. Like, you don't all need to be the same king. The ending was inventive enough and worked a treat for the crowd. A table introduced but used as a platform on the top left corner to hit an elevated riptide to a great reaction. Like, the setup of it looked rickety as hell, yet the two of them bloody nailed the spot and it looked amazing. So TV level street fight, which was like, it almost felt like such a good perfect reset for the crowd after the opening King of the Ring match. And then you can kind of like filter through and maybe even do like a Saudi Arabian celebrity thing. They've done that before, just to kill some bit more time, just really properly help the crowd reset, then go into the Queen of the Ring match. That's not what this was at all. So I think I've talked about since WrestleMania, or even just this year, the pacing of WWE pay-per-views is atrocious right now. they make their shows feel far longer than they are, and a lot of it has to do with the downtime. I'm assuming it feels different if you're watching on Peacock with all the adverts, but for a normal person on Netflix like me, a normal foreigner, boy am I glad I watch these shows afterwards. Like, yes, there is loads of, it's like 10 minutes in between each match, but then the matches just feel like TV matches that don't really belong on the card, and it just really stretches out that feeling of the pacing of the show. Between the two tournament finals, this show just dies pacing wise. That said, each match does have a reason to be here. Karrion Kross, Sami Zayn, you get Sami Zayn onto the card, but also it is a replacement match for something else. So for me, there were two options. Option one was you don't have the match, and I kind of feel like the mid-card would have been a lot better without it, in terms of like the pacing and the flow, because Dominic Mysterio and AJ Styles, Dom getting injured, meaning he couldn't defend the title, so you put in a replacement match. And for me, you're left with those two options. Either option one, you take out the match entirely and you just have the card just be a bit tighter, and I feel like would have been a lot better for the show if they had actually done that pacing-wise. However, this option's also not too bad, because that means you get Sami Zayn on the show, and specifically for these Saudi Arabian shows, that seems to mean something. So it makes a lot of sense to try and find a way to get Sami on the show. Because if he doesn't have this match, maybe he's just running interference. Is that really what we want? We had a repeat of the run-ins that we did. So he was always going to be running in the main event. So he was always going to be there in a way and get a pop from the music, but giving him this time to just let the crowd just have a bit of fun with him. But yeah. But then we get into Jacob Fatu versus Solo Sikoa. And when those two were coming out, I was like, oh, like, I am checked out here. Like, as much as I love Fatu, this show at that point very much felt like four matches would have been enough. Just Ripley Rodriguez as the reset, and he would have had a lovely flow, because unfortunately as soon as the mid-card reached its third match I had checked out. Like, I was already pacing fatigued and past ready for the Queen of the Ring final and main events to come. But Kross and Zayn, always a smart move to get Sami onto one of these cards, but it is a replacement, so I kind of understand why it doesn't really feel like storyline-wise, match quality-wise, that it belongs here. It was a strong TV match for the WWE style, but it doesn't belong in a special. But you do get Sami Zayn on the Saudi Arabian side, so I can understand why they did it, even if pacing-wise it's just, it's not good. So instead we finally got the backstage build between these two actually lead somewhere, and off the back of the most obviously bullshit reports coming out about Kross isn't being pushed because he's afraid to bump, like, screams character assassination nonsense, like, no credence. Like, nothing. The match itself wasn't much of note, though. As much as I read it as a good potential moment to really give Kross a feature and he gets Sami onto the show, this match more played out as a Sami showcase, which is what kind of just led it into feeling like a TV match. We all love Sami, but this match kind of just was. At least you can easily fold this into him gaining that belief that he can become world champion. And that takes us into the United States Championship, Jacob Fatu versus Solo Sikoa. Did they win me back with the only genuinely built to mid-card bout? I mean, it was the most I was into a solo singles match in a while. Does that count? Like, seriously though, if I'm cutting out one of these mid-card bouts, it isn't this one, because, yeah, they more than convinced me why this match was here. One plus was them just immediately laying into each other without any fluff, but my fun time came to a full pause when Sikoa started chatting shit during a lengthy chin lock. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Cobb eventually ran out, but it was a distraction for Tongaloa to return. And he didn't mess up his spot. This is it. This is the era of Loa, I'm telling you. But it was a false finish spot, setting the stage for Fatu to fly and take out everybody. A fake return pop finish used to surprise with the real one. G1 Climax 2023 A-block runner-up Hikaleo making his debut and posing for Michael Cole to get out his bloodline relation information. Tama Tonga and Tongaloa's big little brother slammed Fatu onto the announce desk, and back into the ring he was rolled for Solo to steal the title. Like, even if Tongaloa was like a missing piece, it didn't really feel right for Hikaleo to fill that role. But him being the Fatu replacement, that works far, far better. Especially as it almost feels like Cobb was meant to be that, but Cobb almost feels like something else entirely, more of just like a straight up enforcer, whilst Hikaleo is the actual kind of blood relation that means something. It's like emotionally he feels that kind of hole that Jacob Fatu left. But yes, WWE are not paid all that money just to fly out and put on a fancy, flashy wrestling show. That Riyadh season advert helps with the real reason, and that picture of CM Punk just laid out with his arms spread head like a, in a star shape with a Riyadh season advert just on the mat. It's just like, oh, it's just an image tells a thousand words. Speaking of events, it's a transition. They announced a bunch of stuff on this show. They plugged their Perth shows as well as their Saturday night's main event and Evolution all-in counter programming. When Night of Champions was on air, the NXT show directly against AEW's Big Texas event had sold a little over 200 tickets. I'm assuming it's got to be a bit more now, right? That's a horrifically low number. Also, you could call it a bad idea. And speaking of events, they announced another Tony Hinchcliffe non-televised event for SummerSlam weekend, so they're doing more business with him. It is what it is with these shows. Far, far watchable. And again, evidence that the propaganda is being done far, far better than it used to be. But it is still propaganda. And it's the actual reason for these shows. That's why they're actually paid the big money. And the shows are far, far more watchable than they were, even if I've got currently just such a fatigue of the way that they're doing it. They are also far, far better to watch not live. I have such a bad time watching WWE pay-per-views live because there's so much time killing, there's so much nothing. Where I could be doing something, especially with the shows on a Saturday night. I could be doing something on a Saturday night rather than just sitting there waiting for something to happen. It's a far, far better experience if you're watching the next day. But these shows have a flow that I just bounce right off of, and I don't have a good time watching them live. But I know it comes to Royal Rumble season, live from Saudi Arabia. I know going in, even though I'll be making notes, even though I'll be like, oh yeah, these are like the propaganda notes I picked up on, even though they're doing that, I know I'm gonna have a bad time. that's on me. Anyway, speaking of, let's jump over to Raw. That's a bit of a sign, but don't worry, we got a 1 hour 48 minutes edited version on Netflix, but it was about 6 minutes until the first wrestler walked out, so 1 hour 42 really. Pittsburgh were great, really felt loud after weeks of mid-show mediocrity, quiet crowds for like months at this point. Pittsburgh just suddenly just stood out. And in the aftermath of the Saudi Arabia show, what we got going on? Well, it's the lads who did brawl all over the place in the main event. Sami Zayn and Penta versus the Killer Bees. Main event Penta striking again, but this time it's the actual telly closer from main event to main event. So let's jump on over to Monday Night Raw. An hour into the show, Sami was attacked backstage by Cross, metal pipe to the stomach to give our goodies their setup against two big bees whose offense both targets the stomach area. But we were set up for a main event with Lightly Lads removed via previous segments, a Raw main event with no interference or run-ins. The damage instead was done through that Cross attack, and the only music to hit was Jey Uso's during the post-match Killer Bee beating. Uso out through the entrance with a chair to swing on the bees. The match was an absolutely okay tag main event. Another week giving Bronson and Breaker much needed wins to establish them past Seth's heavies. Really used to set up three lads to step up Seth and his bees. With Sami Zayn, Jey Uso and Penta standing in the ring, be like, oh, we ought to. As for the baddie faction leaders night in terms of Seth, Gunther has become such a good promo that I'm not missing Goldberg's absence in the build one iota. The man's literally not needed. Our Austrian champion's got this. Long may he reign. I mean, unless there's still hope for my currently dead in the water Gunter Seth Sammy trio of happenstance. Still holding hope. That's going to be my own personal Half-Life 3. Not happening. Seth himself came out to link those paths after his Saudi Arabia main event failure less than 48 hours ago. Honestly, didn't mind him reframing the whole thing as a success because the main aim was to stop Punk from becoming champion, and that's exactly what happened. Punk then ran out to kick off a brawl with poor innocent Sethy Boo, who ran away through the crowd and right into LA Knight in the concessions. Seth versus Knight was announced for Saturday night's main event, whilst Punk got a grumpy, moany, hyped up backstage promo. They're always going to get his with Seth. But in putting this in the main event, you are actually building up something to happen down the line. So for me, this is the type of stuff they really should be doing, and I'm all for this. But then we get onto the other stuff on this show. Like Sheamus Rusev has been built up for a little bit, like a background bubbler. New Day having to defend their titles against somebody who's also kind of just been bubbling a little bit without like that much attention. So it's stuff that's been built to, but like we're not going crazy. Bayley Valkyrie as well. Like that was just an angle that played out last week, and suddenly we're getting it bubbling up on this show to lead us into something. So it's technically a payoff which can build to something new, but it's not. It's not something that's got like loads of animosity behind it. Let's actually jump on over to the World Tag Team Championship match. I feel like I've got a bit more to say about it. New Day versus Judgment Day, Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. The Battle of the Days. Not given much after their heel turn. Then they won the tag titles at WrestleMania and were then given nothing once again. So, no, New Day don't deserve to lose their titles because of any other reason than there was never any creative plans for them. Just watch this match. The champions got their entrance during the ad break. That should tell you all you need to know about their current presentation. And that's not me saying that they have to give entrances during title matches. But if you gave them to the Judgment Day, for me, it's either both of them or neither of them. But like, especially in a title match. I'm thinking of Adam Cole versus Daniel Garcia when he opens a Collision show. No entrances for either. Straight into the action. Off we go. It's like, oh, what is happening right now is it pulls you straight to the action. Whilst this makes New Day not feel important because the focus is on the Judgment Day. That's what that's important. Just little things like, do you want to build up your characters on the show or not? And in a match structured to give Judgment Day the reactions, Balor even played off the crowd to secure that babyface role for the night. Like, hey, New Day are great and played their role perfectly. It's just all on the creative that this has their role being doing nothing. So yeah, why not change the titles when you never did have any plans and will never have any plans for them? Now, for me, if there's any critique of, is the New Day heel run working? They are doing good work. Creative has nothing for them. For me, like, a lot of what they've done isn't their fault. They managed to maintain their heat whilst being given nothing for so long. And then they won the tag titles, and then they were given nothing again. And it's kind of like at that point, the fans kind of gave up. That's not on them. That's not the heel turn not working. The heel turn worked. They had nothing for them. In this match, I did enjoy the spot where Woods failed to cut off a tag and instead got caught in a JD choke for Balor to fly in with the coup de grace. I probably enjoyed it more because it didn't work and we instead flowed into a New Day near fall. New Day were given room to cheat for more near falls, all in service of that big final coup de grace pop for the Irish Judgment. Again, no interference, no stablemates or established allies running out, just all in-ring flow, and you can go by the final crowd pop how well it worked. See, it's very, very smart to kind of condition your fans to expect different stuff. At the moment, they're just anticipating the run-ins, and you probably got to use the TV to recondition a whole lot of those, especially more hardcore WWE fans who are watching everything. And let's just put our weekly Judgment Day drama check-in here. Dom was backstage hiding from AJ Styles behind his doctor's note. Finn talked with Pierce and Aldis backstage, suggesting Roxanne Perez be Raquel's new tag champion partner, doing so without giving Rodriguez any agency in the matter. But in agreeing, the new pair will have to defend against one Raw team, one SmackDown team and another from NXT in a four-way at Evolution. The Texan obviously upset at the idea of Finn replacing Liv as champion just like that. Finn twisted it into just wanting to keep Raquel as champion before doing a clubhouse vote on the idea, which was always set up to pass, and Rodriguez got to be like, fine, whatever. And that leads us to the other notes. The show opened up with Rhea Bloody Ripley, within time was joined by Io Sky to set a match for Evolution. Attempt number two for a big Evolution match as they can't counter-program AEW All In with Nikki Bella versus Liv Morgan anymore. I want Rich to read that sentence. Sometimes there's lines where I'm being like, where I'm just like, I would like somebody else on the network to read certain sentences. Just to see their reactions and how they feel with it. Bayley and Valkyria had a full backstage shouty shout that bled into a match. The lines they gave Lyra fully lent into making you dislike her. The thing is, I'm not entirely convinced that's the aim, because Bayley then shouted back in the same manner, leading me to believe I'm just hearing the writer's voice over individual characters. Like, I'm not leaving this week feeling overly confident about the current creative side of WWE. And this feels like little notes which probably start getting reactions in a way that bleed it like later on, because you end up the crowd not really invested in Lyra and she will end up doing a heel turn, the type of thing. It's stuff like this in a way. But I did get that note where it also felt like Bayley was doing the same thing though and shouting in the same way with similar-ish lines. So at that point it's like, oh, I'm not really hearing characters here, am I? Sheamus and Rusev were given 20 minutes to have a banger. And it was. I just don't have a lot to say about it. So this is arguably the most positive I've ever been for a match I've put in the other notes. Two big lads clobbering in that Shamu style. Finally a display for Rusev to show off this more serious bruiser version of his character that worked so well in AEW. The Bulgarian with a much needed win after a hard fought match. Broke to the exposed turnbuckle strut and Machka kick for the pin. His music is still like a keyboard generic version of his far superior AEW theme though. Like, his music plays and it's just like, ah. Oh. That sucks. Just a lad on a keyboard in a small room. Like, I hear Rusev's theme and I picture forgetting Sarah Marshall at the start. He's just doing the music. It's like, oh man, that sucks. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the show this week. Not the most emphatic week, and because yes, there's obviously that cloud of them just doing the Saudi show and like everything that happened in the build-up to the Saudi Arabia show, and then of course it's a propaganda show, so you know what you're gonna get, propaganda. But then there were a lot of little creative notes, and for me that was a big worry going into this Saudi Arabia show of mine, where I was getting a bit concerned that a lot of the quality of the writing is kind of slipping, and it has been slipping for a little while, but I'm really starting to notice it right now. It is like in key areas there's just big slip ups, and I'm not somebody who bang on about match logic or things like that. It's just character shit. It's normally I'm a production guy, and I'll pick up on that sort of thing, and it's why I talk about like show structure and pacing quite a lot. And then there's little things like the one that really did stand out to me was that Lara Valkyria thing. But like, WWE's always been a bit ropey with its dialogue, but quite often the actual story they're telling is at least you can see what they're setting up, you can see why a thing is doing, you can see a character arc playing out. And that's what's disappointed me as of late, where it doesn't feel like that's happening. Or if it is, it's been done poorly. Maybe we'll see what it's like after SummerSlam. Sometimes WWE does have a full ropey summer, and then you get out of summer and you kind of start to build a bit more strongly. And it almost is like they got rocked by what The Rock did all the way back at Elimination Chamber, and they haven't recovered. And it's been wibbly wobbly boat ever since. It's been a windy storm. Everyone's got their sick bags. I was on a crappy ferry back from France once, and that was not fun. Okay. That's not a story for this. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about Friday Night Smackers and Monday Night Raw. And we've got All In happening soon, which means we've got Evolution happening soon. That weekend's going to be crazy because most of you don't need to watch these shows, but I've got to cover WWE shit. So I am going to be watching AEW All In live, because their shows, when I leave watching their shows, I am hyped after watching an AEW show live. I feel so good about wrestling. So I'm going to watch AEW All In live, and you can't stop me. I'll be knackered the next day. You can't stop me. But I have also got Evolution, and I'm going to have Saturday Night's main event. I'm going to have a lot of shit to get through. NXT can piss off. But I've got a lot of stuff to get through as well. So this is going to be a calm before the storm next week. This week was like the kind of the end of this Saudi Arabia chapter for now. The end of this CM Punk this whole thing that's been happening. And like, honestly, I was talking to people that I've got to do like the recording of the wrestling stuff and talk about Saudi Arabia things. But like, that feels so long ago given the rest of the shit that's happened during the week. Like today, just listening to like all the stuff to do with the Microsoft layoffs. Like there's been so much just shit happened since that mentally I wasn't in Saudi Arabia anymore. Yeah, so it's a good thing I made notes. I was able to at least wind back a bit and just reflect on what was happening back at this time of that day. So anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciated, never taken for granted. I'll be back this time next week to talk about the WWE show so you don't have to watch them. With that, I bid you adieu. Adios.